Welcome to the Born and Raised Audio Experience, presented by Onyx.
Today I'm with a special guy that I met at a big SIG event years ago, or a couple years ago, wasn't it? And yeah. We'll touch on that a little bit. But guys, this is the one, the only, Matt Light. He's running the Matt Light Foundation, but his background, and you could probably help me out here. I dug on you a little bit, Matt. So we got 11-year career in the Professional Football League. We got 3 Super Bowl trophies. We got 3 times Pro Bowl, right? We've got, yes, tons of accolations, and dude, it's so nice to see you again. We don't get to spend enough time with each other, but Matt, thank you, man. I appreciate you being on here. We want to talk about a lot of different things, but let's start with you first. How are we doing, brother?
You know, I would say this, right? I think for so many of, I'm sure your viewers, the people that follow your channel, we kind of measure everything in terms of seasons, right? And so I got to say, man, I've been blessed. I have a wife that put up with me being away a lot, as we all are so fortunate to have better halves that allow us to go out and enjoy our passion, the things that we love. My wife doesn't eat meat, which means...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I bring stuff in all the time. She has no problem preparing it, but it's just not her thing. Okay. And it's just a taste thing. That's it. And so, you know, here she is putting up with all my shenanigans. I mean, I got my own butchery. I bring stuff in all the time. There's just things that shouldn't be strewn around the house. And, you know, she's like, "Hey, hon, can you take care of the folding table that is literally covered in blood?" Yeah. I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'll get to that." But it was an amazing season. You know, I the entire time I played in the league, I just kept thinking about the moment that I retired and was able to go and chase whitetail and do the things that I didn't grow up doing in the Midwest, like elk hunting and bear hunting and all these things. And I've been out for a little over a decade now, and I'm just now getting to the point where I feel like I've earned the right to go out and harvest one of these deer that I've been tracking for a long time. And and I kind of say that, like, seriously, right? Like, you know, before it would just, I was a part-time hunter, right? If I got to go out during the season, it was just, you know, hey, I'm relying on someone else's intel. You know, I'm probably traipsing on somebody else's hard work. And I'm just like a flash in the pan. I get to hunt twice, 3 times a season. Now I get to enjoy the things that I find the most fruitful, right? Food plots and habitat restoration and hinge cuttings and all the things that you do as a whitetail hunter to up your odds. Because, hey, by the way, I'm still 300 pounds. I smell really bad and I don't hide very well, believe it or not, Trent. And so, you know, I have to go the extra mile to have success. And for the first time in a long time, I got my target buck. I got my buck at my new place in Rhode Island, and it's just one of those years where you look back on it and you're like, man, I've been blessed.
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. How I've had a privilege to hunt with take a couple guys hunting that have been football players. Derek Wolf, you know, Derek Wolf. And sure. Anyway, I took him bear hunting this last year, and he's even younger than you, I believe. He's in upper 30s or whatnot, and he had complaints of just like joint pains and stuff. Like, do you have a lot of that? I mean, you played 11 years. Do you have a lot of pre-existing stuff that just kills you?
You know, on one hand, I could definitely list a number of things that are hurtful, yeah. But I guess I always compare myself to what I know some other guys are dealing with. And yeah, honestly, I mean, I've had 15 major surgeries. Like, I put major in the category of they put you to sleep and you wake up and you're uncomfortable for a while. That's my idea of major.
That's major. That's major. Yeah. I'd classify the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess the one thing is I'm like a little bit like I'm able to be fixed. I'm repairable. So, you know, I've been lucky and fortunate, man. I've been able to bounce back from, you know, a lot of things that, you know, could have been career ending or caused problems. And, you know,
you didn't miss many games.
You know, I didn't. I missed 1 year. I broke, you know, my tib fib and dislocated my ankle. And I almost came back about less than 4 weeks later, which is kind of crazy. And it was a situation where I had like one of the stitchings worked its way out and I got an infection and then almost lost my leg. So I didn't make it back from that one. Other than that, it was perfectly fine. Standard routine recovery.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you know, I feel decent, man. I mean,
cool.
I just got done taking down a barn. I think I was talking to you earlier in the week and I thought I'd get it done in 3 days. It ended up taking 6 and, you know, all the scars and, you know, gnarliness. And I don't feel that bad. You know, I mean, I guess if you can still do things like that and go out and live your lifestyle, then I think that you have nothing to complain about. But I know a lot of guys, you know, that have really been impacted and their post playing career. Man, it's an everyday kind of thing, right? It's a reality of what you do. You know, you're a coal miner, you get the black lung. It's like, well, okay, you're a football player. You deal with, you know, a lot of aches and pains.
I bet. No, I watched Derek get out of his cot in the morning. I'm thinking, man, that is rough. And you're only like mid-30s, buddy. That's a wow. You know, but man, such a good dude. He's such a great guy. So,
well, by the way, the story of the, was it a mountain lion?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Giant mountain lion.
I mean, I wanted to tell him, I wanted to be like, you know, I wanted to give him a call. Not that I know him. I mean, I played against him and that dude had some fire, man. He could bring it. But doing what he did and I just pictured myself like it would have sounded like a flabalanche going up that mountain. Like I would have been huffing and puffing so bad that not one creature would have been anywhere near me. But you know, what a cool story for him in a moment.
It was cool. And it's inspired some different things too. Like he's putting money now back into, like, they're trying to get mountain lion hunting shut off. And so he's actually, you know, kind of being that spokesperson to, you know, keep conservation going and stuff like that. So it's actually kind of been a full circle. It's been pretty cool, actually.
You know, I have to share this. A dear friend of mine who's one of the better hunters on planet Earth, a guy that I've learned a ton from, he took his son out to Utah and was hunting with Doyle Moss, Mossback Outfitters, right?
Yep.
And I told Doyle, I said, hey, man, if you can make room for this guy, I know it's last minute, but you will have the time of your life. There's nothing like him. He's a New Englander, the accent, the whole nine, and he's like Sasquatch. When he walks, he covers like many hundreds of feet with each stride. He's like 6'7". He's got hair in weird places, but I love this guy. And he wanted to take his son, who's this little guy, Max, and they go out chasing cats in Utah. Yeah, they're in Utah. His son ends up shooting this cat at like 4 yards with a bow.
Oh, boy.
And put it right between the eyes and dropped it in its tracks. I mean, it was one of the like greatest pictures to get. And he's like, yeah, did you zoom in on that? And I was like, no. Nah. But it's a good cat, like a really nice cat. Oh yeah. Great story, man.
Oh man. Speaking of stories, the story that you sent me the other day. Tell me all about this, Matt. This is like the best of the best of the best. Can you just briefly kind of tee this one up?
Yeah, so we launched the Tom Brady of turkey hunting. And you know, when most people look at a title like that and it's a documentary about a guy who shoots a world record, actually, albino Osceola, you probably wonder, how does Tom Brady come into that? Well, the skinny of it is that a dear friend of mine who's also a board member for the Light Foundation hooked us up with a hunt down in Florida. A friend of his was a member at this beautiful place. And we go down and I told him, I said, since you helped us out and we raised tons of money selling this hunt, you got to come down with me. It'll be your first hunt, and I want to be there when you shoot your first turkey. And I'm an avid turkey hunter, like I'm sure a lot of people are. And
oh yeah,
He goes down, and not only does he get a bird, but he gets a world record albino Osceola. He has it mounted. He gets called by Florida Game and Fish. They put him on a cover of the magazine. And the following year, about 6-8 months later after this hunt, we sell the same trip, and he gets up on stage, and I said, you got to help me sell it. And we have video, and he's on stage talking about how he's the Tom Brady of turkey hunting. He killed the Moby Dick of turkey. And then he finds out that he actually shot a broad-breasted white bird. Now, I mean, we know each other enough that shenanigans, and just as outdoorsmen, right, it's kind of like in our blood to mess with people and have some fun. It was, in my estimation, the things that I've seen, the things that I've done, it was one of the funniest moments of my life, because in front of 500 people, he realized that bird that's sitting on his wall, that he relentlessly tormented me, hey, first time turkey hunter, and I get a world record. You don't have one. But if you watch the video, it's priceless, man.
How hard was that to just hold that back, just to praise him for how long? How long?
A year.
To sell the next hunt.
Oh, yeah. And he was signing copies of the magazine for people. I mean, I have mine framed, you know, in the next room.
Oh, that's awesome. But you can watch that whole thing on your where can I find that, Matt?
So yeah, turkeytouchdown.com. So if folks go to turkeytouchdown.com, not only will they see the video, right, but at the end, the important thing is this. A, I love Jamie Marshall, the guy that we did this to. But
you have,
B,
you have to, I think. Well,
he's one of the funniest human beings on the planet, without a doubt. But the secondary thing is that we show a little bit about what we do with our youth hunts through the Light Foundation. And then there's a call, right? If you go to turkeytouchdown.com, you can enter in to win an opportunity, all expense paid trip, to go down to outside of Gainesville, Florida, and hunt some Osceola. I'll be there. We'll be guiding it. This place is epic. And we're going to actually shoot real turkeys down there, so you don't have to worry. It's not going to be a prank.
That's what I was thinking, man. I would be scared as hell to go down there.
You know, look, we've done a lot of these sweepstakes for the foundation, and it's amazing how much it can generate to support the programs we do. But we like to have fun when we do things, right? So, hey, look, if you spend $10 and you win a trip of a lifetime, like all expense paid, right, airfare, everything, lodging, it's worth it. And if you don't, you're supporting the foundation, the work we do. But man, absolutely, just check out the video, because it's a good one.
It's so good. It's so good. I encourage anybody listening to this, you've got to go watch it, because you will laugh until you cry. It is good. It is good. So Light Foundation, Matt, what you got into this out of football? What kind of spurred all that, as far as just you wanting to get into helping kids out, and just kind of briefly tell me that story?
So it actually started in 2001. You know, I get drafted, never seen a draft in my life, had no idea what the process was. I'd never seen an NFL game, or a college game for that matter, until I played in both. So, you know, I don't want to say I lucked into it. Obviously, anything you do in life, you put work into. But in a lot of ways, I was just along for the ride, man. And you know, I think for me, in 2001, you know, I'm getting paid crazy amounts of money to play a game that I loved. I mean, I played football because I didn't go to jail when I hit people. That was like one of my favorite aspects of the game, right? I mean,
it works out.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And so I remember thinking to myself, okay, I've been given all this, you know, to whom much is given, much is required, right? And now what are you going to do? And it was an easy decision, man. I come from a family of educators. My mom taught music for 35 years in the public school system. My dad's a natural educator, jack of all trades, master of many. And I just went to my family and said, hey, if we start this foundation, you know, will you guys help me? And I don't really know what we're going to do, but you know, luckily for us, in 2001, we won a Super Bowl. And then in 03 and 04, we win them again. And I'm going to tell you right now, man, when you're winning Super Bowls, everything's easy. Fundraising, you know, asking people for support. And, you know, really the success on the field set us up for success with the foundation. And We officially launched the foundation in 2002. And by 2007, 2008, we really knew what we wanted to focus on. And now we're serving over 7,500 kids annually. We have a 500 plus acre facility in Ohio. Kids come from all around the country. And it all falls under the Light Foundation leadership umbrella, right? We have, you know, 4-year programs where we make a commitment and we ask the young men that are in that program to commit to 4 years. And it's not easy. Career educational tours, community service projects, camp projects, you know, a lot of tapping in, right?
Yeah.
Sit down, pay attention, get involved. And then we have youth hunts, but we do a lot with kids. MattLight72.com for people that may want to check out what we do. But I think it's kind of easy, man. I like to boil it all down to this. Good people spending quality time with those that need it, especially our younger generation, and just pouring into them, you know?
Yeah. I was surfing around on the website and it just, man, is that facility that all the pictures on the website, is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, sir. It's just outside of where I grew up, like just outside of my hometown.
It looks pretty awesome. It looks pretty nice as far as just a place where kids can go and you guys be riding dirt bikes and doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. And you know, one of my favorite camps, we have a timber frame leadership camp and we're teaching kids the art of timber frame, slicks, chisels, beam boring machines, like all hand tools. And I take down a whole bunch of old barns and then we repurpose them. So it's just fun to watch kids do things that, you know, it's just not, it maybe it's not mainstream, it's not what they see in school, but watching them come together, working with kids they've never been around before and accomplishing something. Because how many times do you spend time on your computer sending emails and you get done with the day and you did a lot, but there's not like that sense of account. You're not looking at the finished product, right? Like something that you created with your hands. And I don't know, man, I'm blessed. I get to watch young people. I get to see that in real time.
That was a big thing, like back in, because I used to cut timber. I cut trees for 18 years, and it was my favorite thing as far as to be done with the day and be able to look back, and you can see what you did. You know, you can see the product that you actually have there that's going to actually go to the mill, that's going to go be a house or whatever it may be. It was actually very rewarding in that sense. Like I totally know what you're saying on that.
Well, and that's Pacific Northwest. Like you're in like real Maine tree cutting. Like I can imagine looking back at a cut and going, damn. I mean, that's, I watch some of that stuff and I'm blown away at what happens out there.
One of these days, if you stop killing all them dang turkeys, you could come out here and go bear hunting with me at some point. You could see all this stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah. No, we should definitely line something up about that. But what is the most question you get asked being an ex-football player, Matt Light? What's the most question you get asked?
Well, I mean,
Can I guess it? Can I guess it first?
Yes.
What's it like to win a Super Bowl?
Definitely. Yeah. It's either that or what's it like in retirement? Like how's the transition been? Right.
Okay.
Now that I've been out long enough, but definitely when I played, especially young people, like what's it like to win a Super Bowl? What kind of car do you drive? How big's your house? You know, that was the kids. And then I think a close second would be, you know, what's Tom Brady like, or what's Bill Belichick like? Right.
Gotcha. I could see that. Yeah. No, I realized too, I met Matt at a SIG. It was a shooting event called Hunter Games. And right off the bat, I learned that we're both very competitive. We all were in that whole thing. And I know second place, it's the first loser, but it sure felt like the first loser. We took second. We should have thrown a fit about that, but we didn't. But I think we were robbed. Mm-hmm. I think we were robbed. But no, you can just tell like a fellow person that, you know, that you played sport, and we were all just like into it, competitive. And that was so much fun with Roach and all the guys. That was so fun.
Listen, had we known a little bit more martial arts, I think we would have fought that a little bit more. But, you know.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Oh, shoot. Yeah. No, that was a good time. And the funnest part of that, well, one of the funnest parts of that experience is having you and Roach there. Roach is a good friend of yours, right?
Yes, sir.
And anyway, and hearing the stories of the shenanigans, like some of the better pranks that you guys have pulled, I just I still bring some of them up these days to some of my friends. Like, can you believe that just happened, that these guys did this?
Well, hey, by the way, one of the ones that I look back on fondly happened at the Hunter Games the very first year, right?
Yeah.
Trophy. And I will never forget the look that Tom Taylor gave me. And it was just like total disappointment. Like, and it was like crickets, like it wasn't really going over the right way. Like people didn't understand what was happening. The owner of the actual outfitting, you know, was trying to grab it out of Roach's hand.
Wasn't good. Wasn't good.
It was so good.
For Tom, it wasn't though. It was so funny.
It was so terrible.
It was good. But what's, can you give us a story? One of the good pranks of like Roach and you guys and who was the other one, like the hunting camp ones with the rental car?
Oh, man, yeah. Well, we have a problem with rental cars, right? So, you know, I think if you put a whole bunch of Neanderthals in a room, something inevitably is going to get broken. And if you give them rental cars, it's almost like a free pass, like, right? Like, well, you got the insurance, and it's not yours technically. So, you know, whatever happens is going to be good. And it started out for us. We were together for a group hunt with the Buck Commander guys, and Roachy is like the ultimate host. He's got like honestly a Cabela's playground for a ranch in Kansas, you know, and he's literally the most giving human being, right? So he just wants people to come in, enjoy themselves, and you know, I know you get that sense the minute you meet him, right?
Yeah.
But then when you see him in his element, it's times a thousand, and so we're all having a great time, and I think some of the guys were playing in his hometown, and on the way back, we had the rental car, and the e-brake was getting pulled, so we decided, well, if it did so well on the dirt roads of Kansas, it would definitely do well on his track, because he had like a dirt bike track, right? And so at that point, things could only go downhill, and it was a precipitous fall in quite a hurry, actually, and I remember driving it. And Roachy and Willie and I were in there. And I remember they had a big embankment. And I think it had to be when they were digging his pond. And I thought that it kind of did one of these up and overs, but it did one of these up and then ended. So
you didn't test that first then. You didn't even look.
Good you call. Know, it was one of those things where there wasn't a lot of attention to detail to the whole flight pattern. And needless to say, the car didn't hold up real well. It was a Toyota Yaris, and when we started, it was a respectable looking car. When we ended, and I'm not sure whose idea this was, but it may have been group decision. It was decided that the best thing we could do would be to run over it repeatedly with a D8 because it had gotten really bad. And I think it was really to consolidate all the chaos into one small pile. And it happened. And I remember the car was, I'm not kidding you, it was less than 2 feet tall when it was all said and done. And we put it on a flatbed and took it back to the rental car company because they said that we couldn't keep it. Roachy actually called saying, hey, look, my kids have really gotten attached to this. You know, is there any way I could purchase this? And they were like, No. Can't. You had to bring it back. And he's like, are you sure? I remember him saying that. And they said, yes, we're positive. So we did. And that guy's face was priceless. He looks and he goes, can I help y'all? Yeah, we're returning a car. Okay, where's that? Right there. And he's like, no, that's not our car. I went,
well, it actually is. Look at the license plate. If you can see it. Oh, gosh, I love it. I love it. No, just listen to those stories of that. You're just... I just couldn't believe like doing that to, you know, I guess you guys have to be in the right frame that you guys are in, I guess, to be able to pull those off, right?
Yeah, well, it's like anything, man. Like whether it's the guys you grew up with, the guys you spend, you know, camp with, you know, when you have enough on each other, everyone fuels everyone somehow, some way. And then before long, man, there's like a raging bonfire. And it's always the next day where you're like, oh, I should have done that.
Yeah, that was not smart.
I mean, we put Roachy's rental car on a ski lift, like on the ski run. Like we put it and jumped the mountain and parked it right outside the place we were staying at, which was on a slope. Like, and the groomer was coming when he finally figured out that his truck, that was his truck. And I would never forget watching. He had to drive all the way down to the base of the mountain and then hop a parking lot or something just to get his truck off the mountain.
Just playing through. I'm just going to play through.
Yep.
See ya. Oh, I love it. You got a ton of turkeys in the background there. I see a couple of them anyway. And I remember you talking to me about like taking kids turkey hunting. You do a lot of that. That's the reason that like your spring is just packed. Tell me about that, like program wise. What do you like? Is that's all part of the Light Foundation as well, correct?
Yeah. You know, honestly, the love of turkey hunting came out of not being able to deer hunt or have my fall, right? It was only season. It was like, hey, you know what? I got the month of May. And up here in New England is, you know, there's great turkey hunting everywhere, but I've never seen anything that competes with this area in terms of just opportunity, quantity, whether it's public land, private land. All five states are just phenomenal for turkeys, Maine to Connecticut, everything in between. And I just got obsessed with it, you know, and I had great mentors, people like Ernie Calandrelli, you know, his Quaker Boy pro staff, and just these guys, just they gave me all the tips and tricks, and I was able to run with it. And I thought, man, let's do this with kids. And you know, it's like anytime you take anybody out for a first whatever, I mean, just that moment. And so for us, we do a youth hunt in Ohio. This will be our 15th year. And then we have one here in Rhode Island. This will be our fourth or fifth year. And man, we introduce kids to amazing mentors and guides, right? But it's you know, during the youth weekend, you can hunt them all day if you wanted, but we don't. You know, we take them out for the morning and then we get them back into camp so that they can, you know, meet other kids and do other activities, team building stuff. And it's a riot. I mean, just having a bird hammering and watching a kid trying to take the safety off or, you know, make a swing on a bird. It's just, it doesn't get any better, man.
No, I would agree. I've been getting a lot into taking more kids and doing some veteran hunts and stuff like that. And it's just so rewarding after you've done it for your whole life. Now you get to relive those things again. It's what it feels like again. And it's just, man, it's so rewarding. It's so much better than pulling a trigger myself. That is for darn sure. It definitely is.
No doubt, man. I the one image that I always have in my head, we had a bird that was down a little bit of, like, we had a field edge that rolled down into a valley. And for whatever reason, the birds were in the valley. That's not typically where they're at. And the bird's hammering nonstop, and we're kind of up on the ridge, and there's not much we can do. We can't make a move on a turkey, right? So I told this young man, I said, hey, listen, I'm going to nonstop cut, and I want you to crawl. And whenever I stop cutting, because a bird was gobbling nonstop. I mean, he gobbled 1,000 times if it wasn't once, you know? So I said, the minute I stop, I want you to come up. And the minute you make contact and you can ID the beard, shoot that sucker. And I'll never forget this kid crawling, crawling, crawling. I'm cutting, cutting. And I probably cut for over a minute. It was sounded ridiculous. And the kid was making his way. And I thought, well, he's got to be within range now. And when I stopped, he came up and his body language was like, whoa.
You know, there it is.
There he is. And boom, he shoots this bird and he tries to get up to go after the bird and he trips and he falls. And, you know, that's why we shoot single shot, break action barrel. And I remember, no, you know, telling this young man. And you know, the aftermath was so cool because you never want to temper a young person's spirit by just jumping immediately into what you did wrong. But it was just an awesome moment. Like, he did a great job. He had one of those surprise moments. He heard more gobbling than most adults that have turkey hunted all their lives.
Yeah.
He had success and he learned a really valuable lesson on what to do, you know, in a situation like that. So I don't know, man. You never forget those moments.
Yeah. No, it's 100%. It's you remember those more than the ones of yourself, honestly. When are we going to go? When are you, or maybe you already have, I haven't talked to you in quite a while, like elk hunting. Is that ever a thing that you wanted to, have you done it yet?
I have, man. Yeah. So right out the gate, it must've been 2012, 2013. I went out west, shot my first bull in New Mexico with a bow, 50 yards. I had him and we got it on film. Actually, we were filming for Buck Commander. And this bull ran from like a half mile out, ended up stopping on the other side of this pine tree that I was standing on. And there's nothing I could do. Like, and I'm talking, he was less than 4 feet from the end of my arrow.
Perfect.
You're right. And it was, I was at full draw, and we actually counted it for like 2.5 minutes.
Oh.
And he worked around to my right, and, you know, he was trying to get downwind of me, and he ended up making his way all the way around. I was able to let down, I repositioned, and the one tree that I turned around to range behind me, he stood right next to, and I knew it was 50, and hit him, and he had no idea what happened. He took 2 steps and fell over. It was honestly as cool of a moment as I've ever had in the outdoors, you know? Yeah, I mean, vividly see every detail to this day.
Come in bugling and everything.
Oh, chuckling, running, you know, it was just a magical moment. And, you know, I've been able to be on several other elk hunts. I shot one in Nevada in the northeast corner, Wine Cup Gamble Ranch, massive 1.2 million acre, crazy place. Yeah. It's actually where the line in Yellowstone, the series comes from. They talk about how the Yellowstone's bigger than the state of Rhode Island. Yeah. It's actually the Wine Cup Gamble that had that moniker. It was two legendary cattle ranches, and a guy here in the Northeast used to own it. And what a spot, man. What a beautiful chunk of ground.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, I don't get to do it enough. I went to New Mexico. I tapped into your resources, took some of your points when I hunted the or the Cibola.
Yeah, is that where it was?
Yeah, it was like the Cibola National Forest, and you had hunted some areas around there. So we hunted, you know, we hunted a number of the different places you had. One of our guys, you know, made a great shot on a bull that we never found, spent 2 days looking for it. I mean, he was sick. We were all just bummed, you know, but, but yeah, man, I don't get to do it enough, and I'm definitely looking for a spot, you know, come this fall, but I should have already locked it down, but life is crazy.
So this year, Matt, I'm doing bucket list thing. We're going to, me and Trevor and another partner of ours, Steve, we're going to go, and it's right in the middle of September. It's like the 7th through the 15th or no, like the 20th or something. We're going to Alaska to do moose. We're going to do the moose game this year, but it's right in the middle of season, you know, elk season, obviously, but dude, it's at some point we got to pull the trigger. And so I think that's going to be, I think we're going to do it this year. So it's.
Buddy, and where at in Alaska?
So it'll be with Papa Bear. It'll be southeast Alaska, South Alaska.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting. I don't know. It's supposed to be huge, high density moose population. They said it's an awesome year for it. It's supposed to be, they drop you off on the pond, you know, and then they say, don't get far from the pond. And everybody we've talked to, like, don't go over a half mile because these things are, you know, I've seen them before. We've seen them. I've just never seen one on the ground yet. You know, I've seen one in Alaska numbers of times, but I guess they're giant. They're ginormous. And so they said, like, don't go far. Make sure you can get it all because we got to kill 3 of them in 10 days.
And then pack them. And can you radio and have them come grab meat? Okay.
Yep. So you text them using your DeLorme or whatever. You text them and they'll fly in that next day, pick up all your meat. So they keep on shelling your meat to a meat locker and you keep on hunting. And they'll move you areas. But the thing is, like, if you move areas, you gotta sit for 24 hours. You can't hunt for 24. So it's like it's burning. Right. It's burning 2 days almost if you're going to do that. So it's like one of those things. No. Like, yeah. So anyway, pretty cool. We're super, super pumped.
Well, you're gonna have the time of your life, man. I mean, to have 3 tags and for you guys to all enjoy that together in a place like that. I mean, that's where, you know, that's where the best, you know, hunting memories.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like the catalyst for awesomeness no matter what. And I'll tell you, man, moose hunting, I've been to Newfoundland, shot several in Newfoundland.
Yeah, you guys have them up there, right?
And then I shot a beautiful bull in Maine. It's probably been 4 or 5 years ago now. And, you know, again, just one of those memories that will never fade. It never gets old. And I think here's the thing that I would say. I hate to rank, you know, what do you love hunting the most?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Everything. Right. Yeah. Like what day is it? You know, yeah.
Squirrel tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I grew up. I mean, small game was king. I mean, I loved it. You know, mountain curs, chasing squirrels, you know, our coon dogs, rabbit, you know, everything. But moose is the best eating of any North American game. And I mean,
what I've heard.
Yeah. You're going to have the best table fare. You're going to be able to bless the people in your family and in your community with the greatest resource out there. It's fork tender, texture is amazing, taste is off the charts. Okay. I mean, but it's not elk hunting, right? And so I can see where you and your brother and everybody that you guys work with and hunt with and what you guys do, it is tough to walk away from, I mean, that world. And I've seen so many of your episodes, watched so much of the content that you guys produce, obviously tapped into, you know, kind of your knowledge and everything on some of my own hunting. Gosh, man, it is so awesome to watch.
Yeah. No, it is going to be one of those. It's going to be a little bittersweet, but at the same time, it's like, we don't live that long. I got to go do it sometime. And Trevor, that's his big goal. Him and Steve both. Like, that's been their bucket list item. And so they're going to take the rifles. I'm just going to take a bow. And if we get in bow range, I'm going to, you know, try and see if I can get one. It's not a huge deal. I'm doing it more for them just so they can cross that off. Because Steve's been on a moose hunt before and he didn't get one. And he paid for it, actually. He paid for a guide and the whole works, paid a boatload of money and kind of got screwed. But long story. But anyway, so he's got a vendetta on the moose thing. So I don't know. So we're gonna do it. But now the ones Newfoundland, like those are, is that a Shiras?
No, they're just the eastern moose, you know. It's not as big of a body as what you're gonna see, right? I mean, you're gonna see giants, you know, the BC, the Alaska.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, these are the eastern moose is let's see, my bull that I shot in Maine. I want to say he was about 860, and that was a really, really good bull, right?
Yeah.
Not record, but a really good bull. And
okay.
I would venture to say that you better be ready to walk up on a 1,200-pound beast.
That's what they said. Like 1,300 is what I've heard. I'm like, what? Yeah, the dude that went last year. He goes, Trent, just to put it in perspective, he says his was 64 inches wide. And wow. And there's like 70s where we're going, I guess, that giant ones. But he said, mine was 64 inches wide. He said, I just skull capped it. I didn't keep the skull. He goes, I just cut the skull off because I took the cape and everything and stuff. He said, just the horns alone weighed 67 pounds. Just the horns.
Hey, your quarters, if you don't debone them, are going to be easily a buck 80 to 200 pounds.
Yeah, they're getting that. And that's the whole thing. It's like what we're told is you got to keep the bones. We got to everything. You got to keep every single rib. You got to keep all that intact. And so it's like,
that's right.
At some point I'm like, okay, so how do you know, I'm sure you can wrestle around 200 pounds and pick it up and everything and get it somewhere. But I'm like, that's a different thing altogether, you know?
No doubt, man. And it's worth every second, right? I mean, you're going to be eating like a king, man. I'm so jealous.
The grind is going to be pretty fun as far as just the whole, you know, the hard part of it is the best. It's that type three fun or something like that. They call it where you look back at it and you go, yeah, that was pretty awesome. So,
yeah.
So, but no, I'm excited, super excited about that. What do you got for this year? Anything lined up already?
You know, it's been kind of a bucket list item for me to, you know, go out and harvest a wolf. So I'm looking at, you know, some options. And I know I was going to definitely give you a shout too. You know, a friend of a friend had, you know, a really good setup, is in a really good spot, but they keep changing the quota. And it's one of those situations where you can plan everything to be there right when it kicks off, right? And odds are you're not going to have success the first night on the first day, but it could literally shut down after a day.
Oh, wow.
So
they reached their quota, you mean?
Yeah. So it's a little, you know, we're kind of looking at some other options, and there's a lot of options to wolf hunt, but I'd like to do it in the States versus going into Canada. So, you know, that's fun. Look, I've had the best predator season of my life. I've been trapping a lot this year. My goal is to make a beaver blanket and do it all from start to finish. I know. Like, who says that out loud, right?
I love it. Hey, but, you got to have goals. You got to have goals.
You do, man. And listen, I've done three beaver over 65 pounds. I had a legit 70-pound beaver.
It's
insane. It's insane, man. And but
can you use the whole thing for like, is it pretty good size?
Oh yeah, man. Once you board it out, you know, you got to skin it, you got to flesh it, you got to board it. When it's boarded out, man, it's amazing. And even after you trim it, you know, you got to, I mean, that's a blanket, a double X blanket, right? Beaver, what they call. So I have to get too many to do a blanket if I get 70-pound beaver.
What are we talking here? Like five beaver blanket? Is that a five beaver blanket? What is it? Is that big?
No, I need 30 is my number to have. I mean, look, I got to cover this. I mean, this takes a lot of beaver.
Are you roofing the house, or are you just building a blanket? 30 of them? That seems excessive. That seems like
I know, but you got to trim, you know. But, you know, here's the best part about beaver, right? It's, you know, I love history, right? Like, if you've ever read, like, Undaunted Courage or The Pioneer, you know, beaver was king. Everybody knows, for the most part, about, you know, the different trapping companies that came from all over, right? Everything goes into everything, kind of circles back to beaver, right? So,
Yeah.
You skin the beaver, you got an amazing plume, right? You then take the casters and you got great attractant for everything else, from bobcat to coyote to whatever, right? Everything wants to eat a beaver. So, which you could go a lot with where we're heading in this conversation, but it's an amazing resource. And by the way, they don't taste bad. They're actually pretty decent.
Do you eat the tail, buddy?
I've had so many people ask me that, and I've watched some stuff on how they boil it.
I was talking to Steve Rinella and listening to some of his stuff, and he eats the tail. I'm like, I don't know, man. I just don't know. There's certain things I think the good Lord just didn't mean us to eat.
Yeah, like, you know, somebody likened it to cow tongue, and I was like, yep, that's another reason why I don't want to eat that, because I've had that, and not appealing.
No, I was at a thing where Brunella made elk tongue tacos, and I'm like, you know, it tasted just like when you boil a skull, you know, that smell when you're just boiling a skull, that's what it tasted like, and it's just like, there's just things on this world that it's just not meant for me.
Oh, refreshing. I tell you what, it's been a joy to get back into trapping. I hadn't trapped for so long. And there's just so many aspects of it that I'm like, why did I wait this long to get back into it?
Dude, you know? I just kind of just biking for exercise. I bike around the house, and I got mountains and stuff and hills around where I live, and I see coyotes every once in a while. I'm just like, man. And so I've actually got some traps now. You could probably tell me I'm an idiot as far as what I bought and everything, just looking offline because I don't know, and doing these foot sets and all this stuff and pounding the thing. Anyway, I haven't got too deep into it yet, but I'm going to. And it seems like a rabbit hole you can spend a lot of time at.
It is, man. And I got to tell you, it's almost like how I view hunting now, right? Like, I love everything that leads up to it. Food plots. I love, you know, everything about putting seed in the ground, amending the soil, you know, doing all that kind of work, setting stands. I absolutely love it. I don't hunt like I used to. I do a lot more still hunting for whitetail and saddle hunting. That's definitely a little bit more up my alley these days, but I love all that prep work. But I really love the post side of hunting. You know, I love, you know, everything about butchering. I put my own butchery in. And, you know, when it comes to predators, I love skinning. And I like keeping everything, right? Like every paw, every claw, every eyelid, you know, like, doing it perfectly and then fleshing it, just it's kind of cathartic, right? It just takes you back. And I also love utilizing a resource, you know, like it's one thing to say that we have to have predator control, and that's the truth, But if I'm just going to shoot them and let them lay, it doesn't sit well with me. So, okay, I'm going to help my deer population. I'm going to help whatever, the turkey population. I'm going to take some bobcat. I'm going to take some coyotes, but I'm going to utilize their fur. And I feel good about that, man. And it's been a banner year. I mean, I've shot 9 coyotes off my front porch.
Holy moly. You got
it's not. Hey, and by the way, I got to tell you, man, I just got an air gun for the first time.
Okay.
It's as much fun as you can have on planet Earth, man.
Is it one of those pump guns, like, or the air compressor? You only get so many shots with them. What kind is it?
So I've got an FX Impact 3, M3, 250 yards. It's deadly accurate, and it's deadly at 250 yards. It's a 35 cal slug, which is a 9mm, and it makes zero noise, suppressed, right? Which is legal, even in a place that's as unfree as the Northeast can be. And it's just a joy to shoot, man. I mean, it's a bullpup 800mm barrel. I'm running either thermal or sometimes I've been running night vision lately.
Okay. And
my goodness, man. I mean, the technology today, the action is, I mean, it's just silly to talk about the action of an air gun. Yeah, but it is unreal, man. And Utah Air, I can't say enough about them. I don't get paid by anyone to say anything. I'm just telling you, they are phenomenal. They tune them. You tell them what you want to do, how you want to do it, because there's a lot to it, man. Like, you got to be like a super tech nerd to figure that, which I love nerds, and I'm a nerd in a lot of things, but so no offense to the nerds of the universe, but I'm not an air gun nerd, and you have to, like, there's a lot to wade into.
How many shots can you get out of it?
It's got a 17-shot rotary clip, and you can shoot 2 to 3 of those on one fill.
And will it store really good? Like, can you, how does that work? Like, do you just put it by the door? Obviously, you're shooting that by your house. You just put it by the door, and it'll be just fine, like, for weeks
forever.
On end?
Forever. By the way, Trey, it's probably one of the most expensive rifles I have. It's stupid how expensive it is, but you can trick them out with anything you can imagine, arc rail, you know, extended, you know, Picatinny. Like, it's got every bell and whistle, and it's really quality, high quality. And I would have to think that the Impact M3 is probably the top on the market right now.
Okay.
But it's a joy to shoot, man. I'm telling you, it's just fun.
I got to check it out. I got to check it out after this. So,
and no more cleaning a rifle, by the way. You don't have to clean it.
Really? And it's accurate up to 250 yards. Like, no joke.
Like, deadly accurate. Yes.
You could kill a deer with it easy, right?
Oh, yeah. My son shot like a 160 class buck with one.
That's an air gun.
It's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to check these things out. I got to see what I'm missing out on. We don't have air. Well, I don't know of any air guns around where I'm at. So, shoot. I love it. No, the Predator thing is definitely, I think that's, we have to keep these things in check. And you can see that's the sad thing. And we touched on this just before the podcast a little bit. And I want to kind of circle back as far as just the conservation side of things. You see Washington doing away with spring bear hunting. You see California doing away with all mountain lion hunting. You see Oregon, I mean, it was what, 16, almost 20 years ago now, that no dogs, you know, no dog hunting and everything. And my uncle is actually, he's one of the government trappers around here. And it's so nuts how many a week he's getting cougar complaints. Every single week he's having to go and help these farmers out and stuff like that. And so, man, it is a definite huge conservation thing of, like, our rights are getting taken every little tiny bit at a time. And it's like, if we don't do something about that, or at least have a position on all of this, it's going to go away at some point.
No, man, you're so right. I mean, it started out, it's always been out here in the Northeast, right? In Maine, they had some of the biggest, you know, donors, right? Or sponsors of this ridiculous bill on bear hunting. I mean, there was one woman that was probably willing to put hundreds of millions into this. And it's, you know, I think, I mean, how unfair is it that, you know, whoever has the biggest wallet wins the war, you know?
Correct.
And you know, we talked about this before we started the podcast. I think it really, it's incumbent upon all of us as outdoorsmen to understand how valuable our voices are and how much we need to set aside the differences between the land dispute with you and your neighbor or who kills the biggest deer. And what we need to rally around is educating the next generation, because I know one thing working with young people, it's taken 50, 60, 70 years for people to indoctrinate, right? Like where we're at today is the result of many decades of people purposefully trying to position themselves for power, not for what's best, not for how they can be helpful, but for power. And there's a lot of young people that are growing up in this world thinking that's normal, and it's not normal, right? It's very abnormal. And we need to be able to, you know, tell the right story, and we can't get bogged down with, you know, oh, I can't believe this. And well, hey, get over it, Jack, because it's happening. Yeah. So the better thing that we can do is educate as to, you know, what is real and what's actually happening, and tell our story and not be afraid to do it and not back down from it, and not also throw it in people's face. We don't have to do that. We just need to talk common sense and be, you know, very resilient and come with facts and not back off those facts, so that, you know, we don't have a situation where in a place like Oregon or anywhere else, Maine, anywhere in this country, we are seeing, you know, our way of life disappear. I mean, it's so hard. I can't take my kid hunting in the state of Massachusetts until they're 13 years old. I mean, at that point, they've competed. Everything else has competed for their time and that's is eroding their minds, right? I mean, how ridiculous is that? So there's a lot of things that we need to fix. There's a lot of things that are going to be coming down the pike. But I think the most important thing we can do is just make sure that we're all on the same page and that we spend the time having those kind of conversations that can lead to young people seeing that there is a difference, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like what you said there, too, approaching it with the facts. You know what I mean? Not approaching it with emotion, not thinking that Winnie the Pooh is a bear. You know what I mean? Like that. It's just like, no, take that out of it. Look at how many fawn kill. Look at all the facts that you have and everything. And just, and it's sad. Like you said, like somebody with such deep pockets can change some of that stuff, can change fact. It's just nuts to me. Pretty crazy, but it's true. Very true. So. But I just wanted to talk as far as like the things that we do. And I don't, what do you like your foundation as far as that goes and talking to kids and everything? And is it based around a lot of that? Is there two different sides of it, like hunting side and like the team building, the skills side of it? Or you just do a bunch of different camps? How do people, like kids out there, how can they get involved in this? And what's the best way to go about that, Matt?
Yeah, so we have a programs tab on our website, mattlight72.com, and there's a lot of great information on not just what the program is, but how they can get involved, how they can sign up. And, you know, it's funny, I get the question a lot, like, you know, what does turkey hunting have to do with leadership? Because everything we do fits under the leadership umbrella, and I love explaining it. It's like, okay, well, number one, to be considered for one of our youth hunts, you have to fill out an application and get it in on time. You know how hard that is for some kids?
That's like great.
If you turn it in a day late, it doesn't get considered at all. It goes immediately in the trash. Not only that, but you have to write an essay, and you're going to be judged on that essay and a couple other factors, right?
Sure.
That takes time. That has a commitment. And oh, by the way, you also have to agree to do some type of habitat restoration where you get to learn about the different things that help make, you know, wild turkey populations successful as a restocking, the most successful restocking in our nation's history, right? So we ask a lot of these kids, and all of that comes down to better leadership qualities, things that will serve them well, whether they're digging a ditch or running a company. It doesn't matter. Like, leaders are good people. They're good in their communities. They have a good heart. They put others first. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've seen this, and a lot of your viewers have seen this too. You know, the difference between a leader and a boss. Well, young people don't necessarily know that, right? Like, the boss will tell you what to do. The leader will show you. right? I mean, there's all these comparisons, right? And the world says that the boss rules, but reality and what has stood the test of time is that leaders always prevail. In one way or another. It's not always a fair world. It's not always a fair situation, but we want to show young people that leading pays off. And here's the different things we can do. So timber frame, what the heck's timber framing had to do with leadership? Well, these kids have to meet other kids. They have to, you know, we trust them with a tool that could easily take off a finger, you know, and they have to present, you know, the piece that they worked on to the other kids that are in a group. I mean, there's so many qualities that, you know, at first glance, you wouldn't necessarily say that that's a leadership program, but once you're there and you see the people pouring into these young people, I mean, man, I get to introduce people that shape my life, like my parents, you know, everybody in my family, you know, contributes in one way or another. And it's just so cool to watch it, man.
I'd love to make it out there at some point. It'd be so much fun just to see it at work. I would love to go through that. It'd be a good time. Definitely, man. What else you got, brother? I've been on here an hour, and it feels like it was about 10 minutes.
Hey, listen, no, look, I would just say this, man. You know, the takeaways, if I was going to try to, you know, wrap it up in 2 seconds, Tom Brady of turkey hunting, check that out.
Got to check it out. I promise you guys, you have to check it out.
TurkeyTouchdown.com is that one. If you want to know more about what we do at the foundation, MattLight72.com. Check out our programs. Check out the events that we do. We've got awesome events, partners like SIG and so many others, you know, for what we do to raise the dollars to do the work that we do through the foundation. And then, you know, I think my biggest thing is, man, I love talking to people who are great for the industry, like yourself, like what, you know, you and your brother do and the rest of your crew is such a great representation of what is the finest aspect of the outdoors, right? Educating, teaching. And I think the more that we can, you know, bring the sportsmen of this country together to tell the right story in the right way. I mean, and recognize that not everybody's an outdoorsman, right? Not everybody understands what we do, and it's not comfortable for a lot of people.
Yeah,
but we can have a good conversation, right? Yeah. And I think the better job that we do in understanding and being sensitive to those things, not cowering to them, that, you know, at all. Yeah. But just being sensitive to it, the better off that we're going to be, because to your point earlier, it's too easy to lose what really, honestly, this country was built on. And we don't want to see it. None of us want to see that.
What's the country song say? If you don't stand up for something, you're going to fall for anything, I believe.
Yeah. And my favorite, and God bless, you know, his recently late soul, Mr. Toby Keith. I'm not as good as I once was, Trent, but I'm as good as once as I ever was, right?
Yes, you were. I've seen it at work. I cannot wait to see this 70-piece beaver blanket that we got going on. That's going to be a...
And am I clothed under the beaver blanket? You'll never know.
Never know. Well, with 70 of them, you should be well cloaked, I would say. Do you do the brain tanning? Have you done that?
I've done it twice. It is one hell of a process.
Okay. My uncle, that's what he does with all his bobcats, is brain tans them. And anyway, all the elk that we kill and everything, he wants the brains from it. I'm like, what in the world? And he says it's amazing. He said it does twice as good as regular tan, but I don't know. I don't know.
Brain tanned is by far and away, it's far more forgiving. It's just a far better product, no doubt, man. And by the way, I just had buckskins made by a friend that I grew up going to rendezvous pre-1800 encampments. So that's all we did, okay, you know, for our vacations, basically. And I recently said to myself, all right, I want to go back to wearing full buckskin. So I sent some brain tanned elk hides to this guy and Stitcher. And he is a wealth of knowledge, 80 years old and been doing it forever. And he made me a new set of buckskins. So, you know, I'm going to have one hell of a look going into the woods this fall.
You'll be looking good. You'll be looking good. At least feeling good. How about that?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Well, Matt, dude, I appreciate it. As always, just such a nice time to see you and everything and spend some time with you talking and stuff. And yeah, let's do it more often.
I look forward to it, brother. Thanks for having me, man.
Okay, sounds good.